need to happen. They have to start more severe punishment for first and second time offenders as far as juveniles are concerned, so that they now know when they're young, they'll grow into a society that they realize will no longer tolerate their antics. Plus, they're going to have to give school teachers more authority to discipline those that interrupt classes and those that just disturb everybody by nature so that no one in that class can learn. They're disruptive, and yet these teachers can do nothing unless they check with the principal. And if it's something where it requires disciplining the child or suspending him for a day or two, that principal must call the school board to get permission. And in other words, the hierarchy, we've just gone crazy. We don't give anybody that we put in a position of authority today in the school system or the criminal justice system the right to use the authority they've been given without 10 other people agreeing or disagreeing with them. And you can't run a given situation or a disruptive kid by a committee. It has to be done by a single individual who we have faith in.
Okay, to continue with that, where are we now? We've gone through neighborhood economics, culturally, politically, and anti-Semitism. I think we covered that, don't we?
Yes, we covered it.
Yeah. So, and organizations, we just did that.
You just did that.
Things you were, and politics, war, depressions, prohibition. Were these factors an influence in your life? And where were you during the Depression, Prohibition, World War I, II, Korean, Vietnam, Civil Rights Movement, and the birth of the State of Israel? That's covering a nice...
Birth of a nation. Yeah, it started, number one, I don't recall Prohibition. That came before my time. I was too young.
Really?
I was born in 1931. Yeah. Prohibition was repealed in 1933 by Roosevelt. And
you missed a good time.
Well, it was the same then, politics being what it was. The unique situation, Prohibition probably would have been a success had the federal government had the authority over the local people, local politicians that they do today. Because under the RICO Act, they can move in if you're a politician taking crooked money, and even at the local level, and put you in jail. Years ago, they knew that the mayor of this city and the councilman here and the police chief here and the ward chairman here were all making money. But there, in other words, an Elliot Ness in Chicago had to work with these people. And he knew some of these police captains in these precincts were crooked as hell, but there was nothing the federal government could do. So it was ridiculous because he's working with the very people that are almost sworn to defeat Elliot Ness or the federal control of the federal,
yeah.
Criminal control of alcohol, because they're taking money off a guy. They're sure in hell going to protect him, because if that convoy of trucks gets hijacked, or by the federal government, they're not going to get anything for it. So as a result, I've seen police work, I've seen politics, I've seen government generally in the 36 years I've been, well, let's say 45 years I've been associated with it. I've seen it cleaned up tremendously. There's no question about it. Because there are federal laws now that mean what they say. And a lot of politicians, as well as a lot of police officers, and as well as a lot of crooked judges, have spent time in jail where many years ago this would not have occurred. When you're talking about the ward chairman was not a bad idea years and years ago. And of course it came about many, many years ago, probably started in New York because of the ethnic concentration of immigrants in New York. So they had a person in charge what was the blacks? Harlem. Maybe two. Maybe there were two wards in Harlem. But they always had a black ward chairman. He was the big man. He was the man that controlled it. So that downtown had a communication. The communication wasn't as great in those years. Many people didn't have radios. They sure in hell didn't have telephones. They had no television. And the communication with me as the mayor and you as somebody working, in living in Harlem was through you, the ward chairman. And if there was a problem, if there was discontent, the ward chairman served a very, very, very important
right.
part part of that community, plus the fact that you have Chicago. They have 50 ward chairmen, all of whom are 50 councilmen, all of whom are 50 aldermen. Mm-hmm. And an alderman's like a squire. So in that district, he sits as the magistrate or squire. He's also the ward chairman, and he's also a councilman downtown. Mm-hmm. And the only thing I want to understand is how, with these 50 people in Chicago, these 50 wards, they had the strong council, weak mayor system. We have the strong mayor, weak council system. But Daley was one of the most powerful men in the country, which is that's like a tail wagging the dog. I don't know how he did it, and yet I knew Mayor Richard Daley. Of course, I know his son too, because he married a girl from out here out in Bethel Park, mm-hmm. and he used to come in. His father used to come in, and we always gave him a couple policemen for protection. And mm-hmm. we'd sit down there in the hotel room and talk to him, and he was very interested in the police. He liked the police. And the police problems, we knew more about the Chicago police problems, we knew about our own when he was done telling us, but he was a very, very articulate individual when it came to that. He was a good politician. Politics is not a dirty word. It's an important thing. Politics is if you work for an organization, any organization, getting along with the other people in the organization is politics is what it is. your daily working relationship with the people that you work with. Ward chairmen were important, and so therefore, ward chairman, I came on the job after taking a civil service test in the middle 50s. I never saw my ward chairman. As a matter of fact, we didn't like each other, so it was best if we didn't talk to each other. Mm-hmm. However, when I made lieutenant, that I did solely on my own by taking a civil service test, mm-hmm. he called me up and took credit for it, mm-hmm. and I wanted to find out where he mm-hmm. was. He said, why do you want to know? Because I'm going to come out there and beat the hell out of you. That's why. Because you didn't have a thing to do with me. Yeah. Taking the, I took the test, and of course, I knew the chief of police, and I knew Mayor Barr at this particular time. Here, Joe Barr and I were friends. Mm-hmm. Certainly, when they came down the list to my name, they weren't going to pass me over. Mm-hmm. The old days, those were the days when politicians at the end of the civil service list, they knew they were going to take it down. It had been up for 3 years. So they knew they had about 90 days and they were going to take the list down. So what they did was, they'd wait till it ran out, probably the last 48 hours, and they'd pull about 10 people from all over the list off of the list, mm-hmm. and they'd make policemen out of them to appease the ward chairman. And they all turned out to be good policemen. We knew who they were. And they seemed to be, they were very competent, mm-hmm. very interested in the job. And there's one thing I liked about a policeman that was appointed by the ward chairman when I became, I didn't care or think about it when I was a patrolman. When I became an inspector of police, if you were put on the end of the list by your ward chairman, I didn't do anything to discipline you. I called your ward chairman and said, if you don't straighten this SOB out, mm-hmm. I'm going to do everything I can to fire him. He's disruptive, he's this, that, and the other thing. And all the ward chairman says, you send him to see me. Mm-hmm. Now, maybe this isn't exactly, the orthodox way to handle it, but nevertheless, when that guy came back to work after the ward chairman mm-hmm. talked to him, he's the best guy you had in the station. Mm-hmm. So you see, somebody was responsible to somebody, and I think that's important today. Mm-hmm.
Don't have it anymore.
Oh, Lord, you don't have it anymore.
What about, you did cover the Korean War, the Vietnam War. Did you talk about that?
No.
How you felt about it? Were you pro?
I was in the middle of the Vietnam War on the local level, because we had all the demonstrations here, and I was one of the guys that had to handle them and the marches and what have you. But here in the city of Pittsburgh, your philosophy as a policeman, whether you like or dislike a law, or whether you like or dislike a war, doesn't negate you from your duties. You've got to be able, you have to do it as impartially as possible. Did I like the Vietnam War? Hell no, I didn't like it. But nobody will turn around and blame the guy that's responsible for putting troops there after Charles de Gaulle told him, we're pulling our people out of Vietnam. Please don't move in that vacuum. And he did. Who was it?
Kennedy.
You better believe it was. No, JFK started the Vietnam War by sending our troops in because we're going to show you Frenchmen that we can handle something better. Number one, it was of no consequence, politically or otherwise, to us if Vietnam did become communist. It was really, because everything around there was communist, I believe, at that particular time. Cambodia and what have you, and some of the other areas. You say they weren't?
I'm not allowed to argue with you on that.
Well, no, no.
That was one of the justifications that they shouldn't become.
Well,
President Kennedy was held responsible.
President Kennedy, in my mind, is I hold responsible for it. However, the only person you ever hear get full responsibility for all the loss of lives was LBJ when he committed more troops there. He thought it was the way to go. It was just, this was my philosophy at that particular time. I didn't care for the Vietnam War, but even if I had been not a police officer, I would not have been out on the streets demonstrating again. I think people frequently forget to use the ballot box instead of sitting down in the middle of the street getting wet, and you know, when it rains and hot.
But they get on television.
Well, that's it. I think the canned media is what's caused all these demonstrations. Prior to television, you did not have demonstrations as you do today, because as soon as the television cameras leave, any demonstration that I've ever been at, that's the end of the demonstration. Mm-hmm. It's all over with.
Mm-hmm. Well, how do you feel about the civil rights movement now? That was a whole another thing.
Well, the civil rights started when I got out of the service in 1954. There were two cases that hit the Supreme Court simultaneously, and I can't remember. There was Brown versus the state of something else, and what have you. And it was about being served in a restaurant, not being served, I should say, in a restaurant. Right. And the other was having to move to the rear of a bus.
Right.
And there's no question but that the southern states were living long past the Civil War on the same criteria that I guess they used during the Civil War. It's true that blacks in certain areas were not being treated fairly. But by the same token, you had many Italians, many Jews, and many other groups not being treated fairly in certain areas. But the civil rights movement was definitely coming. And when the Supreme Court ruled in 1954, there is no such thing as separate but equal facilities, whether they be schools or whether they be anything else. That was the beginning of the civil rights movement, and that was under Earl Warren.
Mm-hmm.
But the unique part of Earl Warren was the fact that when he was governor of California, he thought nothing of putting 100,000 Japanese in those concentration camps out there. And when Eisenhower appointed him, he thought he had one of the most arch-conservative individuals in the world that he was putting in the Supreme Court. And no sooner did Earl Warren hit the Supreme Court, he did a 180-degree turn and became one of the most liberal justices we've ever had. And probably as a mental cleansing for what he had done to the Japanese during World War II. I really believe this is really one of the reasons that they started to pick on these. However, during this particular civil rights movement, at the same time, one of the groups that was very active against police authority and still is today is the
the organization.
The organization that represents people. What's that organization?
Yeah,
ACLU.
Hey, the American Civil Liberties Union. Right. In other words, they make it a point to go overboard to give people civil rights. But the only problem is, along with these civil rights, damn it, people have civil responsibilities. And nobody has told anybody that. It seems to me, in order to qualify for your civil rights, you have to be a good citizen, and that's by living up to your civil responsibilities. But until that ever comes out, you just don't bestow rights, in my opinion, without somebody having to have a certain responsibility, and that's society generally. But that's the way it's being done today, and unfortunately, I think the Earl Warren Court, I think what they've done is they haven't gone totally conservative with this new court. However, one thing that in my opinion, they have done, they have stemmed this tide of liberalism, because liberalism, as I saw it through the years, a liberal was somebody that complained about everything that was going on and never had a solution to what he was complaining about. And I tend to be, you know, kind of middle of the road. And somebody said, oh, you're a conservative. Well, they gave us tests, which I was glad to take many years ago. And I came out fairly middle of the road. I thought it was an arch conservative. There's certain things that are repugnant to me, some of the things that happen, these skinheads and so on and so forth that go on. I think that's ridiculous. And not because it has any Jewish connotation to it or black connotation. I think Hitler was an asshole. You can leave that hole off. But in any event, as far as I was concerned, These were some of the atrocities that were committed, and The same as these, the Serbian and the Bosnian, you know, the Bosnian today, ethnic cleansing.
Yeah.
What in the hell is ethnic cleansing? There is no such thing like as ethnic cleansing. And Hitler wanted all 6'2", blonde-haired, blue-eyed people in Germany.
Yeah.
But in any event, that's a problem. So I didn't like the Vietnam War, but nevertheless, why I did the job that I was supposed to do all through.
What have you to say about the birth of the State of Israel?
Well, that started in 1948, and I believe it was cut from Palestine, was it not?
Yeah.
And I think it was the British, and I think it's a wonderful thing. There's no question about it. I think many people in the world, the Russians, the Russian Jews, the German Jews, I think especially those that are coming from communist nations, say up until about two or three years ago, they wanted to go to Israel because they thought that was the promised land. The only trouble is when they got there, they found the same bigotry among other Jewish people that they found in their own land. In other words, you're a stranger in a foreign land.
Right.
And it's hard, you know, you can't talk there, you know, some of the Orthodox Jews didn't speak Yiddish or what have you, or Hebrew. And they found that living there was entirely different. It was foreign. In other words, it was different from what they had experienced. And the older people in Russia, many older people that went to Israel found out that they couldn't survive. In other words, it was just too different. And they did eventually go back to Russia again and finish their years there. And that's happened many times. But what I'm saying is a lot of people, the Israel is very self-sufficient in so far as what their ability to tame the desert has been. They built cities. It's quite a culture. There's no question about it. I think that they've certainly demonstrated their ability to defend their own country, which they have to do. You know, that no question about it.
Have you ever been there?
I have not been able to go to Israel. I'd like to go.
Why not?
Only for the simple reason I've been working all the time. Mm-hmm. Now, if you have a way of me getting there at no charge, you let me know.
But they are so...
Wait a minute. Wait,
how do you feel about the fact that little Israel is surrounded by vast territories of Arabs who own most of the land in that part of the world, and yet the Palestinians are not welcome into any of those other neighboring states?
Look who's arguing now.
Well, I'm throwing that as a question.
Well, no, I understand what you're talking about.
See what he has to say about that.
I know what you're talking about. Well, number one, you know, the people have been there for many, many years, and of course, you've got little Israel surrounded by Saudi Arabia, cheap gods, and some of these other. Number one, I don't believe, and I don't think that the Arabs are good soldiers. So I know that Israel's going to be there for a long time. I don't think they have. As a matter of fact, I think this is one of the things. Saddam Hussein?
Yeah.
From Iraq. This is one of the things that I thought the so-called last war,
Desert Storm.
Yeah, when they didn't try to apprehend or kill him, one or the other, I think that was a big mistake because this man is going to build nuclear arms.
Oh yeah.
And I think if anybody in all of those Arab Emirates are going to eventually seal Israel's faith, they're going to do it with atomic arms. There's no
Absolutely.
Question in my mind. That's the thing I think is wrong. Mm-hmm. We didn't go all the way with this desert storm. It should have had more than just, you know, taking Kuwait back again. Mm-hmm. Whether or not that was part of Iraq at one time, I have no idea. I'm not sure. I don't have maps that old. Israel's got a tremendous problem. There's no question about it. They're trying to maintain their sovereignty with all of these other sovereign nations that are there. However, remember, at the time Israel in 48 became a state, all of these other areas were controlled by other governments. In other words,
no democracies.
There were no democracies. Plus the people who lived there. In other words, what was it? The British had
mandate.
They had it, everything there. See, when the when British rule left, that was a thing that, you know, may inevitably seal Israel's fate. I don't think so. But when they left these people to their own devices, now this is the same thing that you're going to have with these African nations eventually.
Exactly.
There's no question when they all the countries move out, what was it, Holland and France and Belgium, all the rest, and these people do not have the ability to rule themselves without corruption and without getting arms, because the only strength they know comes from the barrel of a gun. That's the only thing that they understand. And this is going to cause problems for some of the white communities over there in Africa. And it's going to be, it's going to be a very sad situation. I sincerely believe that Israel will survive, because I believe that this is something we have to do in this country. Mm-hmm. And that was somebody was waiting for me to say that at the table here, I would have been upset. But in any event, that's absolutely correct. I think that Israel, they've done a wonderful job, and after, 1948 to the present time, I think that they've done a magnificent job. Mm-hmm. I think, but you're also starting within Israel too to get a group of people that are becoming a little bit liberal. They don't like all this killing. They don't like all these wars. They don't see where where it is necessary, and yet unfortunately, Israel's in a position where they have to display their strength in order to remain sovereign. That's the only way that they'll remain sovereign.
Okay. You remember earlier we asked you about some local political personages, and we talked about Pete Flaherty for a while, and I think we mentioned Sophie Maslow. I'd like you to reflect back, if you could, perhaps chronologically, about some of the principal...
All the mayors I served?
Not necessarily only mayors. Some of the notable people that you happen to run into that you want to make a comment on that's meaningful. I don't want to necessarily hear, he's a nice guy.
No,
a significant political or civic comment.
Is it still on?
It's on.
Yeah, okay. That was all recorded.
Three minutes to do this.
Not much, I know that.
In any event,
we'll
have 10 more minutes.
Well, that's all right. You can put another tape in there,
too.
Go
ahead.
But in any event, I let's start with Dave Lawrence.
Okay.
In other words, I think Dave Lawrence was a great civic leader and a great humanitarian. Mm-hmm. And he started down in the first ward of the city of Pittsburgh as a laborer, worked his way up.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he did achieve the greatness.
Mm-hmm.
And he was one of the great politicians that I can recall.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I do remember about Dave Lawrence, if he met you and he liked you, he never forgot your name,
mm-hmm.
no matter where you were.
Mm-hmm.
And he also found, if he found a vacancy in his organization where he could use what you could, something that would benefit him, he would always approach you and ask him and give you a job, whether it was nepotism or other way. He always wanted to surround himself with the people that were the most successful in their chosen field. Very good man. And Joe Barr, of course, was a state senator, and he eventually came to Pittsburgh after Dave Lawrence left and went to, he went to Washington, D.C., worked for Lyndon Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
But he was governor first. Dave Lawrence became the governor for 4 years.
Dave Lawrence became governor. Barr was defeated, I think, finally. By Flaherty.
No, he refused to run again.
He refused to run again.
Defeated the judge. I can't think of his name.
Mosmano.
No.
Okay.
But matter of fact, the man he defeated became a judge, and he died of cancer 4 years later. But in any event, he was a mayor I worked for, and I...
Barr?
No, Dave Lawrence.
Lawrence.
First.
Yeah.
Then later on, I worked for Joe Barr,
mm-hmm.
the mayor, and he was also a leader. He wasn't a dynamic personality such as Dave Lawrence was, but he was adequate for the city of Pittsburgh,
mm-hmm.
as long as he had a good executive secretary.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
then, of course, from the Barr era, we went into the Pete Flaherty era,
mm-hmm.
and as I said before, Pete was frugal to a fault.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, I really believe that once
mm-hmm.
people who supported Pete attempted to approach him after he was mayor many times to talk to him, he was a little bit reticent. He wouldn't mm-hmm. have anything to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
And his favorite slogan was "Nobody's boy." Mm-hmm. But that, you know, that was a slogan that had he not used it and not lived up to it, you know, to the nth degree, he might have met some industrialists downtown mm-hmm. and been a very successful mm-hmm. second day in yeah. Lawrence mm-hmm. because he has charisma and personality.
That's right.
And he gets yeah. along with people. Mm-hmm. And I think it's unfortunate that he became more or less a recluse mm-hmm. toward the end of his service. And then I think he went to Washington mm-hmm. and he served as Attorney General under, it was Jimmy
Nixon.
Clark. Was it? No, it wasn't Nixon. He's a Republican. It would have been...
Carter.
I think it was Carter. Carter must have, yeah.
Yeah.
Was it Carter?
Yes.
All right, right. Okay, mm-hmm. Carter brought him in as mm-hmm. you know, an assistant mm-hmm. attorney general. Yeah. And I think Pete was in his orbit. He and Nancy liked, you know, the Washington political circle. And, of course, when Carter lost, you know, Carter didn't run again, that was the end of his tenure. We then got into the Dick Caligiuri jury area, and I worked for Dick, and I respected and liked him. As a matter of fact, he made me assistant superintendent of police. But Dick and I had gone to Alderdice together in the late 40s, and our families knew each other, and Dick was quite a dynamic personality. He was able to go out and win over groups of people.
Likeable.
Yes, likeable. And that was it. He was able to talk to them. And he was able to sway them or persuade them, and unfortunately he died of amyloidosis, I believe it was. But it was a pathetic thing, and of course toward the end of his tenure he lost control of it, and unfortunately his aides were running the city rather than he, and that's something that I don't like to see, you know, as not only a city employee but as a taxpayer, because I think the elected officials must be held accountable. Mm-hmm. Appointed officials certainly have a responsibility to check with their elected officials before mm-hmm. they make plans mm-hmm. and they enter into agreements. From there we went to Sophie Maslow, who was an old friend of mine of 35 years, who then of course made me chief of police. And Sophie was a wonderful person, there's no question about it. She did have a handle on city politics, but unfortunately, the budget caught up to mm-hmm. Sophie, because through the years, everybody was cutting the budget, and she too several times cut the budget. And when that happened, it painted her into a corner. She couldn't move and do some of the things mm-hmm. that might have been really helpful for the city of Pittsburgh. However, buying the Pirates was under Caligiuri, but I don't think that's one of the better things that happened, although I like the Pirates, I wouldn't want to lose them. But it's going to cost the taxpayers in the years to come a bundle.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, you watch and see. If they don't direct their efforts toward a World Series and they're successful like they were the last couple of years, mm-hmm. and they just have a mediocre team, people are going to lose interest, and of course when that occurs, they lose revenue.
Right.
And we're going to hurt mm-hmm. as a result of that. But in any event, why Sophie is now determined she's no longer going to run. I'm sorry to see her no longer running. We, of course, as we speak last night, Murphy is now mm-hmm. Now probably going to be the primary candidate because you know the spring election is over and primary is over, and now the general election, that'll be it. So he'll have a headache of taxes and where to get them. And basically, the tax structure of the city of Pittsburgh is a responsibility of the legislature of Pennsylvania, passing laws that adequately allow the city fathers to get off the property tax. Why should we be penalized and get onto a different type of tax, such as a consumer tax of some sort? I think it's a more fair and equitable way. If you don't want to pay the tax, don't buy the item.
Mm-hmm.
So I think Murphy's going to have to wrestle with that. He was a legislator. Mm-hmm. Harrisburg, maybe he'll be successful in swinging the legislature over to a different type of tax. I certainly hope
so. The legislature didn't have a good, let me say, public opinion was not behind the legislature, was it?
I don't follow you.
I mean, the average person like me, we peasants, felt that the legislature wasn't doing their job.
Oh, they felt that ever since I've been a kid in Pennsylvania. Yeah. The legislature has not been one of the most, they've never ingratiated themselves with the tax-paying public, you know, or the public generally. And they're a necessary evil, we have to have 50 senators in Pennsylvania, a governor, a lieutenant governor, and I don't know how many representatives, but a slew of them, probably more than we need, 200 and something. Yeah. But in any event, I think if the legislature was doing their job, they certainly helped Philadelphia out of these financial binds. They certainly should help the second largest city in Pennsylvania, Pittsburgh. But everything west of the Capitol, the roads, tax structure, and everything else has never been good. Everything east of the Capitol to Philadelphia, you know, headed toward New York, has always been good. Nicer roads in the east part of Pennsylvania. But that historically has been the responsibility of the government, governor and legislature. But there's no question in my mind that government, people are also going to have to realize, damn it, that government cannot function without taxes. If they want, such as Westmoreland County, the taxpayers in Westmoreland County, which is north of our county, wanted a better jail and a bigger jail so they could put these people in jail. I mean, these petty things. And they wanted very definitely to get some of these people off the street. Well, they did. They built a nice jail. There was $67 million worth of jail. Then they raised the tax $2 million and now the people want to impeach the county commissioners for raising the tax to get the money to run the jail that they wanted. You see, it's ridiculous. People are going to have to realize if you want more police, you're going to have to pay for police. Because police today, basically, on a full-time police officer that's 5 years, which is the highest grade he can go as a police officer, with all his fringe benefits and overtime, costs the average taxpayer $50,000. And that's not cheap to have a man at 3 o'clock in the morning on a dark...